Welcome to episode 40 of 40 Minutes in the Old Testament. That means something. I don't know what it means, but it seems like we should have had something amazing planned. We don't. In fact, we have nothing planned. But we don't even have Brandon. We really kind of messed this whole thing up because we just now realized what it was. But, hey, there's a conference coming up. I mean, it's like right around the corner in Orlando. Christ Old Fast Conference, February 18th through the 20th. You can go over to ChristOldFast.org and you can register for that. It's not too late. You can get it done. Go over to 1517 Legacy because we are under their banner there. We are a project of them, and they've got a lot of great stuff going on over there that you can check out, other podcasts and articles and all kinds of stuff. And Chad, where are we at in Genesis on this 40th episode of 40 Minutes in the Old Testament?
You know, 40 is a very biblical number, so I do think this is probably going to be the most sanctified episode we have so far.
Well, why do you think we went with 40 minutes, Chad?
Exactly.
It was either 7 minutes or 40 minutes, and we decided right. 7 was too short.
7 just didn't seem quite long enough, but 40, that's a good choice.
Yeah.
Good generational number. We are we're not in chapter 40, that's for sure. We're kind of in the middle, toward the end of chapter 28 of Genesis. We're in the middle of probably the most interesting episode in Jacob's life. This is when he is on his way into exile, and he stops for the night, sleeps in open ground, and he has this dream of the ladder or the stairway that's extending from earth to heaven. So I think we finished around verse 17, chapter 28, something like that. So we'll pick up there.
All right. I wonder if there's people that feel like this has been like 40 episodes in the wilderness.
Probably so. I'm sure there's a few out there. Yeah,
maybe we're finally going to get to the promised land here.
I think we will. I think we're getting closer anyway. We'll step by step. We'll get there. So here's Jacob, our friendly deceiver, the younger brother, who has, with the help of his mom, received the birthright, the blessing of the firstborn that legally, anyway, belonged to his brother. His brother is understandably angry to the point of wanting to kill him. And so Jacob's mom says, hey, you need to get out of here for a few days. So let your brother cool off. Tell you what, it's time you get a wife. Won't you go back to where I'm from and marry one of the daughters of my people? And then once you've done that, you can come back and we'll all live happily ever after. Well, it doesn't work out quite that way, but that's where we are in the narrative about Jacob anyway. So he leaves home. He arrives at Bethel and spends the night. In the middle of the night, he has this dream of this stairway extending from earth to heaven, and the Lord stands above him. We talked about that last time, that God's not at the top of the ladder looking down, but he's rather right there by Jacob. He's giving him the promise of presence, that he's going to be with him, and he promises that he will have descendants as numerous as was promised to Abraham. And he says, wherever you go, I am with you, and I will keep you, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've done what I promised you. Kind of an echo there of Jesus promised his disciples at the end of Matthew 28. Lo, I am with you always. So God's going to be with Jacob, and he's going to bless him. He's going to bring him home. So Jacob wakes up, and here's Jacob's response to the dream. He says, surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So that's where we get Bethel, by the way. Beth-el in Hebrew just means house of God. Just like Bethlehem means house of bread, that Beth is the word for house. Now, what I find remarkable about this is Jacob just stops wherever. I mean, it looks like a good place to camp for the night. So he lays down, puts a rock under his head, and all this happens. He didn't know the Lord was in this place. He didn't know that this was going to be where God was going to reveal himself. But God's revelation is what reveals also that this is a sacred place. So the way that God's presence is known, his house is known, the gate of heaven is known, is by the presence of God and by the promises and the speaking of God. So if you were to read this particular story in light of where we're at, you know, where's the house of God? Where's the gate of heaven for us? Well, it's where Christ is. That's Bethel. That's the house of God. That's the gate of heaven, because that's where Christ has revealed himself. It's where he speaks his word. It's where his presence is at. And that's, if you were to choose a name for a church, that'd be a great name. Bethel. It's the house of God. It's not an architectural designation. It's a verbal designation that God speaks, God acts, God is present. And because that's where he speaks and acts and is present, that is the house of God. So his word is what determines everything. His word is the means by which he comes to us, dwells with us, and blesses us. So it really doesn't matter where you're at spatially. I mean, if you're in a church, if you're somewhere else where Christ and his word is, that's the house of God. That's the gate of heaven, because that's where God reveals himself as the God who is for us, who is with us, who speaks his promises to us.
I think Jacob's a weird guy.
He is a weird guy. Yeah, why do you think he's weird here?
who puts a rock under their head?
That is strange.
I mean, yeah. Dude, you're on like a sojourn or something here. I mean, you got like a pack or something, or wad up some clothes. Who's like, I need to find a good rock to put my head on. It never even occurred to me to put my head on a rock. That sounds horrible.
It does. Yeah. I don't think that I've ever slept anywhere with any kind of hard object under my head. I mean, a rock or I don't know.
I'd rather have nothing.
Whatever it might be. Yeah. I'd rather just lay flat on the ground. Anything better than a rock.
That's weird.
Yeah. He never took camping 101, I guess. You're supposed to use something besides a rock.
Of rock.
But the rock becomes important because when he gets up in the morning, he took the stone pillow and he sets it up as a pillar, and then he pours oil on top of it. And he says it, he called the name of the place Bethel. Previously it had another name, it was called Luz. And then he makes a vow, but before we get to the vow, let's pick up the stone again. He says, this stone, which I have set up as a pillar, will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. So the stone becomes important. The stone marks the place at which God appeared to Jacob and blessed Jacob. And he'll come back here after his 20 years of exile. He's going to come back to this place just like he promised. But it's kind of interesting too, because in Hebrew the stone is called a matzevah, and it kind of depends where you're at in the scriptures as to whether that's allowed or not. Because actually, these stone pillars were used as cultic objects by some of the pagan religions of the land, and so they were forbidden in Moses' law. Because they had this pagan connection to their own religious rites, but you do have a few situations where they're actually used as a sacred marker in Israel's history. For instance, it's when Rachel dies later on, Jacob sets up a stone. It's kind of like a headstone, I guess you could say. Absalom set up one for himself when. Later on, when Jacob and Laban, they make a treaty, and they set up a stone pillar that's like a treaty witness between the two of them. So the stones are important because the stone is like a mute witness to a promise or to a loss, like a gravestone is. But in this particular case, it marks this spot of the theophany, of the divine appearance of Jacob, and he anoints it with oil as a means to sanctify it, to set it apart as the most significant place to him as he begins his exile.
You know, what's also is a little known fact. Pillar is actually Texan for pillow as well. That's
yeah. Hand me that pillar so I can take a nap.
They gotta get. I really need to get me a new pillar. That's actually what's going on there.
The true Texas English comes out.
What's up? Even God knows Texas is best, right?
He does.
It's right
he
there,
does.
It's right there in yeah. the Hebrew.
The true Holy Land. So stone pillows and ladders extending from earth to heaven and promises, all sorts of stuff happening here in this story. It's important for Jacob, because if you put yourself in Jacob's shoes, this revelation that he receives here is perfect timing, because he's leaving home. He's just stolen the blessing from his brother. For all he knows, his brother's actually pursuing him, going to hunt him down and kill him. His future is unknown. And at this point of weakness and vulnerability and the beginning of exile is when God appears to him and assures him that he will be with him, they will bring him home, and that he's going to bless him along the way. Which just goes to show what a patient and loving and merciful God we have, that he would do this for such a scoundrel as Jacob. Because Jacob has certainly not deserved this appearance of God to him and all the promises that God spoke to him. I mean, he's leaving because he lied. He's leaving because he angered his brother. He's leaving because he had done nothing right and everything wrong. And yet here's God promising to take care of him despite all of his sins.
Yeah, that's how God does it. God likes to give you something when you're on the run.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
That's a perfect timing. Yeah, and it's these stories, part of the problem with us, at least with a lot of people, is we know these stories too well. In some ways, it would be nice if I could just erase from my mind everything I know about the Bible and just read it for the first time as if I've never read it before, because I think sometimes when that happens, you take a person who doesn't know the scriptures and they're reading it for the first time, they're shocked by some of these stories, or they're scandalized by them, or they see things that maybe we don't see because we've read them so many times. You know, this is a great example of that. And there's stories like this throughout the scriptures where at the moment at which you would expect God to destroy someone, punish someone, is the exact moment at which he appears to them and is merciful and gracious.
You expect the story to read, and so Jacob, on the run, put his head on a rock, and then a bear came out of the woods and ate him. Right? That's
yeah, the end.
That's how.
Jacob got what he deserved.
That's how this is supposed to happen, but that's not what happens.
Yeah, that's the backward ways of our backwards God, who is always doing that which we least expect. The opposite of what we expect. In fact, acting in ways that often to us appear to be immoral and unjust because they don't fit with our preconceived notions of what should happen to bad people. But that's God. He is he's not us. He's actually love and mercy and grace, and he acts according to those attributes by giving to sinners what they don't deserve.
Yeah, when you get what you don't deserve, that's a real good thing.
It is. It is. And Jacob certainly gets what he doesn't deserve. He gets the dream. He gets the promise. He gets the presence. He gets everything. And he makes a vow. He says, this is a kind of a typical Old Testament vow. We see the same thing. Jephthah in the book of Judges. And Hannah makes this vow, a similar vow. Absalom makes a similar vow that, if God will do this, then they will do that. And so Jacob says, if God will be with me and keep me and bring me back and give me what I need, my daily bread, more or less, then I will return to my father's house in safety. Then the stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and of all that he gives me, I'll give him a tenth. So this is Jacob's way of promising God that if or when God does this, that Jacob will respond likewise.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's chapter 28.
Let's get all the way to 40. Let's go.
All right, let's go. All right. Chapter every 5 minutes, we can do this. So in chapter 29, we pick up the story where Jacob actually gets where he's going. So the scriptures don't give us a whole lot of details many times about things we're actually curious about. So we're not told about what happens on the rest of Jacob's journey. This of course, would have taken a while. But it jumps ahead. It jumps right from Jacob's vow to his arrival at his destination. So it says, Jacob went on his journey, which interestingly, I got to throw in a little bit of Hebrew here. That phrase, Jacob went on his journey, it literally means lifted up his feet. And it's the only place in the Bible where this occurs. Now, we can conjecture exactly what it means, but I almost had the impression that he walked with a little bit of a lighter foot, if you will. He wasn't as weighed down with worry and guilt and everything as he was before. So his burden was somewhat lightened. He lifted up his feet and he journeyed onward. And he gets to where he's going. He came to the land of the sons of the east, which is where his mom was from. So he's back in his mom's home territory. And once more, this will not be the last time we see this. Once more, we have romance happening at a well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what happens with Jacob. He gets where he's going. He doesn't actually know that he's there yet, but he comes to a well. And there's some shepherds with their flocks gathered around the well. And there's a large stone that's over the top of the well. This is not the regular watering time. So Jacob engages in a conversation with these shepherds and basically asks them, hey, what are you doing here? You should be out. This is not the time to water your flocks. You should be out letting them graze in the pasture. So what's up? And they tell him that, well, we can't do anything until they, whoever they are, roll the stone away from the mouth of the well. So they're having this conversation, Jacob and these shepherds are. And all of a sudden, while he's talking with them, Rachel comes walking up with her father's sheep because she's a shepherdess, just like the daughters of Jethro were also shepherdesses. So she's out taking care of her father's sheep, and the shepherds tell Jacob that this is Rachel, the daughter of Laban. So he realizes that this girl is a relative of his. And so Jacob has a chance to show off his superhuman strength. So he walks up to the well, and this huge stone that's over the mouth of the well that evidently took several men to move, Jacob moves all on his own. you can just see him kind of, you know, rolling up his sleeves a little bit. Rachel's walking up. Yeah, take care of this stone. He pulls a He-Man and takes the stone off the mouth of the well all on his own.
He says, this stone is a pillow to me.
Yeah. I shall lift this stone as I lift a pillow.
just toss this over there. Yeah. I'm gonna sleep on that later.
I've slept on stones bigger than this. So, I assume that Rachel is impressed with his brute strength. So he takes the stone off. He waters the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And that reminds me a lot of, it's kind of like mother, like son here. Because if you remember, when Abraham sent his servant to get a wife for Isaac, when the servant gets to where he's going, to the well, then Rebecca comes out and she waters all these camels that belong to Abraham's servant. So like his mother did back then, Jacob is kind of doing the same thing. He waters the flock of Laban, his mother's, his uncle Laban. Then Jacob kissed Rachel. and lifted up his voice and wept. Now, here's a bit of Bible trivia for you. This is the only time in the scriptures in which a man kisses a woman who is neither his wife nor his mother. So you can tuck that away the next time you play Bible trivia. This is the only time when an unwed man kisses an unwed girl.
It would be Jacob that did that.
It would be, it would be Jacob. So he moves right from impressing her with his physical strength to giving her a kiss.
He must have felt like she was really impressed.
Yeah, he must have. I'm sure she was. I'm sure she was very impressed.
This girl, like, that was a pretty impressive feat. She won't mind if I just lay it on her.
I'm sure she swooned when she saw his biceps.
Oh, man. Guys are ridiculous.
Yeah, they are. They really are. And I'm sure he was taken by her beauty, too, because even though it's not mentioned here, a few verses later, I love the translation. Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Okay. So she was hot, in other words.
The hottie by the well is a biblical.
The hottie by the well, that's our book that we'll be beginning soon. Yeah, biblical dating, hotties by the well.
Yeah, that's it.
What is it with all these beautiful women showing up at wells? I mean, that does happen over and over.
I don't know.
All the patriarchs, they end up with this real attractive woman.
I just think it's weird that he starts crying. Yeah, like,
yeah, that is strange.
Like, she must be thinking, this is a weird dude. He's like moving this huge rock, then he kisses me and starts crying. I don't recommend that as a move that anyone should try.
You're probably not going to get a second date. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
No.
I don't think that's not going to win the hearts of most ladies, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, that's a strange move for sure.
Well, Jacob is a strange guy. He dresses up like his brother. He has strange dreams. He sleeps on pillows and he kisses and then he cries. He's an unusual character. But hey, it worked, you know. It did work. He goes on to I don't know what Rachel's reaction was. She must have thought, who is this guy? But he goes on to tell her who he is. He's a relative. Actually, they're cousins. They literally are kissing cousins.
Also a little known biblical.
Also, yeah.
Kissing your cousin is just biblical, man.
There's a lot of relatives that are engaging in romantic relationships in Genesis.
That's another reason why Texas is the most biblical place on earth.
Oh, so what happens? Rachel runs. She tells her dad what just happened. And Laban's good. Laban's happy to see him because now we have Laban kissing Jacob. Of course, you know, the Oriental form of greeting was a kiss. That still takes place in some cultures today. So this wasn't so such a weird thing. He brings him to his house, and it says, "I wish I could have heard what Jacob says." It says Jacob related to Laban all these things, so everything that had happened. Well, I bet that was an edited account.
I bet so.
So here's what I did. I dressed up like I was my brother. And my mom and I, we lied to mom, to dad. And then I was able to get this blessing. And he's trying to kill me. And that's why I ran. And by the way, can I marry your daughter?
Yeah, I think it probably went like this. So here's the thing. My brother is a real insane person. And he's so crazy that you know, my parents didn't want to give him the birthright. So reluctantly, I went ahead and went along with it, and they gave it to me. I couldn't bring myself to do any harm to him, and he's chasing me down now. And but then I had this dream, and now here I am, and I moved this huge rock, and your daughter is there, and God's just really blessing me. You know, for honoring my father and mother in such a profound way.
I like it. That ring, for everything that we know of Jacob, that rings true. You know he's going to put a spin on anything that he says. So here he is, talking to his uncle, future father-in-law, telling him, quote, all these things. So Laban says, well, your family, you know, your kin, you're my own bone and my flesh. And he stays there a month. And, you know, during the course of this month, I suspect that Laban was devising a plan, as we will hear more about Laban as the story goes on. He was a match for Jacob in the art of deception. You know, Jacob was peerless back home. Well, maybe his mom was a pretty good deceiver too, but when Jacob meets Laban, he has definitely met someone who is a good match for him in the art of deception. So Laban is thinking to himself, well, we need to come up with something where I'm going to benefit from having this relative in my house. So Laban says, because you're my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be? Well, Jacob probably wasn't serving him at all at this point, but he's going to go to work for him now. Laban has two daughters. We've already met the younger of the two, Rachel. And now we're introduced to the older, whose name was Leah. Now, Rachel means like a ewe lamb. Leah means cow. So even why would you name your daughter that? I mean, in that culture, you know, we don't know what that means in English, but I don't get it. Yeah.
There's few people in the Bible I feel worse for than Leah.
She is, if there is like a character that just elicits sympathy, you almost hurt for her. It's Leah. She did nothing to deserve any of the stuff that that happens to her.
But you will see too is that God is very sympathetic to Leah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'll see at the end of the chapter when it's talking about the birth of her sons that I was thinking about this morning when I was getting ready for this, that, you know, if I were to have written the biblical story, then I would have placed the kingship and the priesthood and these important parts of Israel's life within the family of Rachel, her sons. But it doesn't work that way, because Levi and Judah, the priestly and the kingly tribes, they're both the sons of this unloved, unwanted wife. So God is compassionate toward her. He sees her suffering, and he is merciful and gracious to her, and gives her these sons. He gives her these two important sons in the history of the nation of Israel. So here's the plan. Jacob loved Rachel, it says. Well, let me back up. I'm sorry. It says Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Now, that's a Hebrew idiom. It doesn't mean that she couldn't see very well. It means that just she wasn't attractive. She was lacking in luster, if you will.
She didn't have that twinkle in her eye.
Huh? Yes, she didn't have the twinkle in her eye that that Rachel had. So here's Rachel, the beauty queen, and here's Leah, the unattractive one. And Jacob loved Rachel, so he says, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Now notice Laban's response. This is important. Notice what he doesn't say. It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me. What's significant is he doesn't say who her is. You can almost see Laban kind of looking over at Leah as he says the response. Jacob thinks, of course, he's talking about Rachel. And Laban is saying, yeah, I think it'd be better if I give her to you than that I give her to someone else. So Laban has a plan, and Jacob has a plan, and these two plans are about to come into conflict. So Jacob did what he said. He served for 7 years, and this is a beautiful line. This is verse 20. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Can we have an awe moment? Now, this is actually, there's an echo of what Jacob's mom had said. Remember when he left, she said, stay for a few days, and then I will send for you. So we have here the same phrase. So, you know, even though it's 7 years, even though he was gone much longer than his mom ever envisioned, these 7 years, because Jacob loved Rachel so much, seemed to him but those few days that his mother said he would be gone. So the 7 years are up, and Jacob says to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her.
That's a weird thing to say to your father-in-law, by the way.
Yeah, that's
they're so upfront about it.
They are so upfront about it. There is no holding back. They are very explicit.
They're just talking man to man here.
Yeah. Give your daughter to me so that I can have sex with her. It basically is what Jacob is saying to Laban. It's time. I've waited 7 long years. So they have the wedding. Laban gathers all the men of the place, and they have this feast. And I'm sure at the feast there was not only food but drink, having a good old time. Yeah, we don't know exactly everything that happened in weddings back then, but it was fun. It was a feast. It was a party. You know, it was a wedding party. Wedding parties are always fun. And it says that in the evening, all right, so we've already got the time of day here. It's dark. They've been partying for a while. Probably had some fermented beverages. Laban took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went in to her. Now, these brides would have been veiled, as was the custom back then. And it's possible, probable, that Jacob, all his senses were not completely, you know, 100% because of...
It seems like he had to have been, like, just blitzed.
Yeah. Like, if he is, this is the second time in the scriptures where we've had a very drunk guy having sex. You know, we had Lot with his daughters earlier.
Yeah, you got to be blitzed, right, for this. Yeah. Like, then you can't be like, I think I'm over the legal limit. I'm not going to drive. I think I might be one over the line. You just got to be on the verge of passing out, man. Like,
yeah, this is not good. And then when scripture sometimes forces a slight delay, you know, we want the action to just jump right to the next thing, but scripture sometimes delays that. It's a rhetorical thing because we have verse 24 thrown in. Oh, by the way, also Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. It's like this parenthesis in there that delays the action as it moves on. So we've got Leah. We've got her maidservant, Zilpah. Verse 25, one of my favorite passages in the scriptures. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. There is no punctuation in the Hebrew, but if there were, there would definitely be an exclamation point after this particular phrase. Behold, it was Leah. So you can just imagine Jacob rolling over in the bed that morning and looking at the woman beside him, for whom he had worked 7 years, with whom he was deeply, madly in love, who held the key to his heart, all that romantic stuff. And he rolls over, and looking at him is
a cow.
Yes. Leah. Yeah. And, he's not very happy about this situation, as none of us would be.
How did Leah get like talked into this?
Well, her dad is a very convincing character, so I suppose that he pushed her into it.
He's like, this is the only way to marry you off. You don't understand. It's never going to happen if we don't do it this way.
Yeah, not only how did Leah get talked into this, but how did Rachel get controlled to where she didn't do something about it? There's no way that she could have known what was going on, too. I mean, they're having a wedding feast. Well, we're not. Those are questions. Unfortunately, we don't have the answers to. But here's Jacob's response. What is this you have done to me? Wasn't it for Rachel that I served with you? Why then have you deceived me? Oh, here we go. Here we go. The deceiver is deceived. Poor Jacob. Everything, the chickens came home to roost. He who had deceived his brother, deceived his father, stolen the birthright, dressed up like he was somebody else in order to have what he wanted, now has the tables turned. And his uncle ends up deceiving him. So Laban acts like, this is great. You can see Laban, he just all cool and stoic, acting like he's shocked that Jacob would be upset about this. He's like, well, come on, you know, it's not the practice here to marry off the younger before the firstborn. You should have known that.
You know,
everybody knows that. That's not our tradition.
You know a lot about firstborn and that kind of stuff, Jacob.
Yeah. Why are you so upset? You should have known. I mean, you did have sex with this woman. So how did you not know that it was the older of the two? Then he goes on. He's like, I tell you what, let's do. Just go ahead and finish off this wedding week of celebration with this, my older daughter, and we'll give you the other also for the service, which you shall serve with me for another 7 years. So Laban has this all figured out. He is a plotter. He's a planner and a plotter. And this worked out. I mean, he gets both of his daughters married off right after one another. Now, this is kind of I know we only have a couple minutes left, so I don't know if we're going to reach all this, but finish all this. But there's a bit of ambiguity here, and I guess one could go a couple different ways here. But it goes on to say that Jacob did so. He completed his week, and he gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife, and then he gives the maidservant. And Jacob also has sex with Rachel. He loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban for another 7 years. Now, when I read that, I read it as if it's not that Jacob had to wait another 7 years to get Rachel, but that he finished off this wedding week with Leah. He married Rachel, had another wedding week, and then he was obligated to serve another 7 years to kind of fulfill his end of the bargain.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he ends up working 14 years for seven of which were for a wife that he didn't want. So we're getting close to our 40 minutes here, but you know, the great thing about this story is that, it shows that, you know, with all of the mess that was going on here, with all of the self-serving motives, the deception and everything else that was happening, just like happens, of course, still today in families and in churches and everywhere else, you know, God is still at work behind the scenes, as it were, making sure that his will is going to be done, because in the end, that, as we talked about earlier, that's what's going to happen, because it's from the sons of the unwanted wife that he will raise up the priesthood as well as the Messiah, as the king, the anointed king who will come.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. He's going to bring about the Messiah through the unloved, which is what he does.
Which is what he does. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we are out of time. So I'm sure next week we're going to talk about spotted goats and all kinds of stuff like that. Thanks for joining us for episode 40 of 40 Minutes in the Old Testament. Sorry we didn't have anything amazing planned, but that was pretty epic. A lot of deception. So we will see you guys next week.